Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome into this week's edition of Bullring Breakdown. Like I said on Monday, now we're going to cut these things back to about one episode a week. I can't promise it'll be Wednesday every week. Just going to try to get some different people in here, do some different things, and it might come out on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, sometime in the middle of the week. But just keep in mind that we're going to try to work things through the meetings for the racetrack in the winter and a whole bunch of other stuff. So, interviews will still come weekly, and I do want to remind everybody that the interviews are sponsored by D&L Disposal. They should be your first call for your waste management needs. They offer a regular residential garbage route in Jasper, Trusburg, Woodhull, Addison, and the surrounding areas. Aside from that, they also offer dump trailer service rentals for your bigger needs. They will drop it off at your location. All you do is load it up and they'll come and take it away. Give them a call today at 607-382-7609 to get started with D&L Disposal, the premier residential waste management service in the Woodhull area. I want to remind everybody before we get underway here to please like and subscribe on the YouTube page, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, Woodhull Raceway on Facebook, Woodhull Raceway 64 on TikTok. And like I said on Monday night, I'm not exactly sure what we have in store for the TikTok here now that the racing's over and we really don't have any new video to put out on there. But we'll see. I'll work with the guy that's doing that and we'll see what we can come up with. And we'll just keep on moving forward. It's probably going to be a long winter. By August, everybody's ready to get done with racing. And then by well, I know by January I'm itching to get back to the racetrack. So it's going to be a long winter. Bear with us. We'll do the best we can. But this week my guest is going to be Colin Wyatt. Colin Wyatt, driver in the Hometown Excavation Crate Sportsman, his first time, first season underneath the behind the wheel. Interested to see how that went for him, and a little bit of photography talk too. So we're gonna get Colin Wyatt in here, and let's get this thing underway.
All right.
Colin, how are we doing today?
We're doing good. How are you?
Oh, just kind of can't believe the season's already over, but I don't know. For you, it might seem like it dragged on forever.
Yeah, I mean, there in the middle of the season, it definitely dragged on. Like, every week after, what was it, 4th of July weekend, we would pack the track, and I came off right before we were about to go green, and the car was at 2:30, and I'm like, this isn't right. I don't know what's going on. I came off the track thinking, oh, his radiator's plugged with mud. Pulled everything off, there's nothing in there. So as much as I wanted to be mad at the track for making us pack and it caused my car to overheat, I couldn't put blame on him. I mean, that had nothing to do with it. So, we went through a stint there, it being my first season, and I expected to run into some issues, but man, for one to last almost a month, it kind of killed me because all I was looking for this year was seat time. So,
Right, and I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, so July 12th, July 19th was didn't start, and then
yep.
August 2nd was a DNF. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you pulled out for the feature and then went right in immediately.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the next week we just said screw it and came out. Ran maybe a lap or two and then pulled in because the car got hot again. It was just a trial and error thing at that point. Thought we
Right.
had it and we didn't.
I got it. So I guess how defeating is that? Because just your first season behind the wheel, you've been around racing a long time, but your first season behind the wheel, and then just to go through something like that, where, like you said, your whole goal really is only seat time.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of defeating, but it was like motivating at the same point. Like there's points where it's like I don't even want to touch the car because I just don't I'm not confident that it's going to fix anything. And there were plenty of times we had taken it I had taken it to a couple people, and my dad really pushed me to take it over to Levi Riley's grandfather. I forget his first name to But we had taken it over there and thought we had some stuff figured out. Herbie Wright had came down to my house. Bill Brewer, Dayton Brewer, I mean, Jeff Doherty, Chris Doherty, anybody and everybody we could have asked just had their hands on deck and was willing to help. And that was awesome. Like, that's racing to me. I mean, everybody is willing to help, no matter who you are. If you ask, they'll give you something. Lawson's even there's so many people that helped me through that situation. I couldn't even name them all. So to see everybody willing to help me and, you know, put their heads together and figure out this conundrum of an issue that I was having, for lack of a better term. I mean, it really pushed me to, you know, keep going back to the track and figuring it out. And the hard part was, is, you know, you'd start in the shop, run in the shop for an hour, it'd be fine. You go down on the track and boom, 2:30 in 3 laps. Like
Right. No.
that was more the feeding part, is like, we're here, I'm trying, but it's not working.
Right. And it's a little hard to get it, I would imagine, to get it up to the temperature it gets at the racetrack.
Yeah, I mean, those cars, with our cars, you can throw a piece of cardboard in front of the radiator and it'll build temp really quick.
Okay.
But once it got to temp in the garage, it kind of stayed there. It never really rised. And you know, we had changed water pump and fans, fan spacing, radiator, power steering pump, you know, changed a whole bunch of things, and you know, nothing worked. And then finally, I was about to put a ceramic seal in the motor because we were like, oh, maybe it's got a head gasket leak. Bunch of people had said, oh, you can ceramic seal it. You know, we've had motors outlive physical cars because of that ceramic seal. They blew the motor and the ceramic seal never broke. I was going to pull the radiator, put an old one in it, and put the ceramic seal in. And when I emptied the system out, I found in a radiator hose, the inside lining had started to pull off, which in my eyes was the sole reason this car was overheating. It was restricting the flow of the coolant, and therefore I couldn't move fluid fast enough to cool the motor down.
Right. And I imagine that just ticks you off a little bit more that it was something so
Yeah, you know,
dumb. I
it
mean,
does. You know, in the end of the day, you know, from the stand side of things, or from even the media side of things, like, you don't see how much money went into fixing that car when it could have been $40. Like, that's the kicker. I'm like, I'm mad that I spent all this money to fix it when it could have cost me this, but I'm more happy that it's fixed than I am mad about the money I spent.
right. And I want to touch on, I guess we'll just move forward. I have to imagine that, do you plan on running Outlaw at
Yeah, so
the end of the month?
my last and final race of the year will be the Dutch Hoag for the 2 day
Okay.
show at Outlaw.
Okay, well, I'm just looking here at Woodhull. I'd have to imagine after all the trials that you went through that finishing what was it, 12th, 13th, in a field of 23 cars, you know, that's got to be pretty good. Make you feel a
Yeah,
little better.
I was pretty happy with that. I mean, we had been for the past couple weeks struggling to finish a race, right? So Outlaw, we went for the, I can't remember what memorial it was, but you know, it was a field of 33 cars.
The
And
McMillan one, I think.
yeah, I think so. It was 2 grand to win. That's really all I know. We ended up in a B main, was absolutely horrible in the heat, but ended up in the B main. We're moving, and you know, just got caught up and ran out of talent, spun somebody out, spun me out. And then didn't make the show. And then to come to Woodhull the next week, you know, not a huge field, but a good field. Made the show, and then, you know, battling for almost dead last, got ran over, ripped the brake line off 5 laps into the feature, don't finish again. So, and then we go to Outlaw and, you know, put it in the redraw and start on the outside pole, fell back a little bit, ended up in a 3 wide situation, bent the front end up and didn't finish that race. And then came to Woodhull, you know, we made the redraw, started 12th, and kind of sat there all night. I mean, and I was moving forward before we had that big long yellow. I felt like starting to get a momentum and move forward there. And then we had that yellow, and I've started to learn that I'm quite the rhythm driver. If we get a lot of restarts, I absolutely am terrible. But if we can get laps in, I start to settle back down in the seat and, you know, calm down a little bit and kind of can get into my groove. So yeah, finishing the race was huge. 13th, I don't get too excited about that, even it
Well,
being my first year, but like, I'm still okay with it. I mean, I was racing before that yellow, I was racing with Parsons, who had won earlier in the season and unfortunately got DQ'd, but won another nevertheless. But and that made me pretty happy to be able to run side by side and almost pass him before the yellow came out. So,
Right. Well, and I would say too in that feature, I don't think I remember you taking a ton of damage, so
no, I
that's
didn't.
always a plus.
I don't think I hit anybody or anybody hit me. Actually, I take that back. I did get hit once. Not a big deal. Nothing happened. I'm happy with that. So.
Yeah. Well, I give you a lot of credit because that 1 week I thought you got, I think you started, what'd you start? Second, maybe on the outside pole. And
Yeah.
I told you I thought you got hit by every car as you made your way backward. And you
Yeah,
said,
I mean
no, I don't think anybody hit me. I was just kind of nervous.
that. Yeah, I mean starting on the front, I don't think I'll ever like starting on the front. I mean, front row is in my eyes, and Dayton will say this every single time, it's the worst place to start. You have no idea where to run. You have no idea where anybody behind you is. So, I'd much rather start third at Woodhull than first or second in any situation there is. I mean, you kind of gauge just the pace. That's the hard part, right? Being my first year and starting on the front row is the thought that always goes through your head is, am I going fast enough or am I going too fast? Like, do I need to slow the car down or am I blowing through everything? That night, I found out real quick I wasn't going fast enough, but I don't think that night the track was kind of had a lot of character. And
Was that the week it was rough?
oh yeah,
Okay.
it was very rough that week. And nothing on the track, every track has a rough night. If we have more than one, then that's probably going to happen. It is what it is. Everybody has the same track. So
Right.
I never had a handle on my car that night. Maybe made two good laps, and that's how I felt that feature. So I wasn't too upset about throwing that one away because I was just terrible that night. I mean, that was simple and all driver right there.
Yeah. Do you ever talk to Dayton about maybe getting more comfortable on restarts, or you just think that'll come with time?
I think it'll come with time. It all comes with seat time, right?
Sure.
So with my background being around racing, like I know what it looks like from the outside of the car. And Dayton said it in his, and I'll say it again, as I have plenty of hours and laps around any track in iRacing, I know what to do on the starts in my head. Does it happen? Does it translate to my feet or whatever? Maybe not, but it's totally different from iRacing, right? I've been racing those cars on iRacing for years, and I've raced this one for, 20 times. So there's a lot to learn, and I think the comfortability will come.
I can't believe how fast it feels.
Yeah,
I mean, that was the one thing that I learned, and that was just a hot lap by myself, nobody else out there, and I could have swore I was going 100 miles an hour.
it's different. I mean, my first time in the car was at Outlaw, flat-footed into the corner, and it really is not what you expect. I mean, the car rolls right over and it's plants, and there's so much traction that you don't think you have, and getting used to the car turning and rotating and rolling over and knowing that edge of, all right, if I hit this hole, I'm going to bounce twice and then I'm going to go. Or if I set the car on the top, am I going to absolutely just never turn? That's the big thing that's hard is, you go into the corner and, oh, the car doesn't turn. What do I do now? Do I hit the brakes? Do I turn left even further? Do I hit the gas? Like, that's every corner that happens. That's the same thoughts that go through my head, and it's a split second, but every one of them rings off in my head. And that will come. That's the part where it's like, okay, this will come in time. You'll
Right.
catch that push sooner or something like that,
Yeah, and I also can't believe just how unnatural it feels. Because
Yeah.
usually, so the fans that listen and the drivers definitely know, but when you go into the corner, the way it sets is such an unnatural feeling that your body goes up and down at the same time, and you feel like you're going to tip it over. And I when I did it, I corrected, and then I would go back. I got too nervous, so.
Yeah, that was my hardest thing, was getting used to letting the car do what the car wants to do and not turning instantly back to the right when you set the car, because that's what you instinctively want to do. You come from a road car. Well, if I'm going around the corner, the second I get to the center, and I'm going to start steering to the steering back straight. Well, that's not what you want to do in those. You either, you got to do what the car wants you to do in those situations.
Right, and it's kind of amazing, really, the how much they want to do it. You know,
Yeah.
the car will, and Kyle said it to me. He said, you know, these things almost drive themselves, and I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. But then you're in there, and it's just kind of weird how it, like, obviously the driver put has a lot of input, but just
Yeah.
it the way that it sets and it wants to go the way that it's supposed to is, I don't know,
Yeah, the
pretty
way those
amazing.
cars are designed and set up, I mean, they want to turn left.
Right.
And then somehow they want to turn left into the corner, and when you come out of the corner, they want to keep going to the right. It doesn't make any sense to me, but it's how they work. Like, it somebody with a lot of education figured that out, and it wasn't me, but
Well, absolutely. Yeah, that's probably why well, who Bicknell probably has a lot of money because of it, so
yeah.
so what made you get in the car? I know you've been around it, you've been a photographer. What made you want it this year? You said I'm gonna go buy one of them things.
I think it was about time. I had been sick of behind the camera, and I kind of got to a point in my life where I had things that I had room for it. I had money for it, sort of. And I just it was kind of one of those things where I saw a car and I was like, I could build that. And we bought it I bought it last July, during the middle of the season. So I'd had the car for, almost 6, 8 months. It kind of sat in my garage. I'd planned on doing stuff with it, piecemealing parts back together. And, in anything, it got procrastinated, or I was struggling to build it because, I had to learn a lot. But I've always wanted to be in a car. I mean, ever since I was young, when I was, in elementary school, I wanted to do go-karts, and we never could because, I grew up with three sisters and they were all older than me. We all played sports, two educators for parents. It was super busy. We don't have time for that. All the maintenance that goes into go-karts and all of that. So I think ever since then, I've just been stuck on racing. I played sports in high school, and it just something about racing is totally different. There's never that same rush as being at the track and being out late. And it'll never be sports for me.
Right. Well, like you said too, I remember playing against, I don't know if you remember, but I remember playing against you in high school sports, and we did not like each other. And then, but then, like you said, with the racing community, it's funny because you needed all the help in the world, and you
Yep.
had all these guys that were willing to help. So it's more than just competition, you know. You meet all these
Yeah.
people, and it pretty much become your family and your friends.
Right. And that's the big thing, I think, where being on the media side of it for so long is I had developed all these relationships with all these people who know what's going on. They're good racers. They're veterans at this point. I mean, Dayton alone, I mean, he'll never say it, but he's a veteran in the sport at this point. He's raced for 10 plus years. Brady Foltz, Donnie Lawson, all of them. I mean, and then you go to the outlaw side. I mean, Alex Payne, Jeff Doherty, Chris Doherty, even the Easlings, and your George Millers and everybody. They all, if you needed help, I think I could turn to any single one of them and they would all help. So
Right.
that's the great part about motorsport versus regular sports, in my eyes.
Yeah, I agree with you because they're even when you break something, you know, you break a part up in the pit area, you got what, probably 5, 6 people coming over
Yeah,
there asking you if you need parts or.
point proven. I mean, this week, my brakes had locked up in the hot laps, and I knew exactly the second it happened what was wrong, but I didn't have the part to fix it. So I ran over to Lawson's, who have helped me way more than they ever had to, and asked them for, this week it was a bungee cord, like, to put on my brake pedal to make it come back. That was all I needed, and without asking or anything in return, handed it over to me and helped me out that night. So
Right. How was that experience? The first time you were on fire. I know it wasn't the big, you know, up in flames like some
it
people see, but how was
it
that experience?
wasn't fun, let's say the least. When I got out of the car and I saw where it was, I was not super concerned. But Yeah, I've never gotten out of the car that fast, I can tell you that. But
Well, so what happened there? Did they just go on the radio and tell you that, or did you know?
I was about to pull in because I had no power coming out of the corners, and the car was like a dog, and I could barely move it with the throttle. And I'm like, I'm just gonna go in, something's not right. And I got to the front stretch and they just locked up and I couldn't go anywhere, and then they must have ca caught on fire. And I'm guessing John Stewart, I think is who it was, had said 23, you're on fire, get out, pretty rapidly.
Right.
And so, you know, you got to undo, take your steering wheel off and everything. So I think I got out in plenty of time. I was unscathed. And you know, Kenny's sitting there facing the track, and he's, you know, he and this is where it comes back to, it's all a community, right? And he's like waving his hands like, what's wrong, like what's going on. Oh, instantly concerned, you know, because everybody in their cars hears fire, and you know, you instantly get concerned. So
Right. Well, that's the worst thing, you know, especially at a place like Woodhull, you know, you're all doing it for fun, really, you know, and for something like that's, you know, you guys are strapped right in there.
yeah,
And
I mean, you're not getting out. You can get out quick. I mean, it all comes
right.
off within 30 seconds. You can get out of that car, but you know, it's hectic at that point when you hear you're on fire and you can't see it, you don't know what's happening, you don't know what's on fire at that point.
Right.
I knew it was behind me because I didn't see anything in front of me, but and
Sure.
that's when you can't see it in front of you, the only thing behind you is brakes and a fuel cell. So and a rear end, I guess, but
Right. Well, good thing it was the brakes and not the
yeah,
alternative there.
yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I think it would have been a much bigger issue if it wasn't. But so
Right,
what
yeah.
so I when they put the fire extinguisher to it, does that hurt anything back there, or is it?
No, that didn't hurt anything back there. It kind of just coats the it, all it was is the calipers, I
Right.
think, still had brake fluid because we had been messing with the brakes. I had bled them all, and I think I had forgot. I'm guessing I had forgot to clean them off, with brake clean or whatever. So the fluid that was still sitting on either the calipers or the rotors had caught on fire. So it doesn't, in the wheels and the hubs, it doesn't really get into anything. That's pretty much sealed up. So it didn't affect anything. I just actually took the wheels off today, and it's still on there because I haven't washed the car yet. But all that stuff, it made it through the feature and the heat and everything. It's still there. It's nasty stuff, but it does its job.
Right. Are you a big fan of washing your car?
I don't mind doing it. With my schedule, it's kind of tough though. So like, I normally do all my work on the car in the morning. I start normally around 7:30, 8 o'clock, and I have until about, you know, 11 o'clock to do all my work on the car, unless I really want to. Because I work 12 to 9 at night, and majority of the time I come home at 9 o'clock, and I don't want to go out in the garage and work on that thing. I will if I have to get it done, but I try not to. I'd rather take my time at night and do whatever I want to do. It's majority iRacing, so got to get my seat time somewhere.
Right. Do you now is that kind of this was that a big jump in the work for you when you got to working on the car? Only the only reason I ask is because I know that you took a lot of pictures, and I don't know if you're as active taking photos, but I know that's a hard job too with the editing and just pretty time consuming. So.
Yeah, I would say definitely there's a big jump from my photo side to working on the car. I mean, I'm working on the car probably 4 or 5 days during the work week. If it's for 2 hours or you know, 5 hours during a specific day. Photos, on the other hand, I mean, if I took 1,200 photos on a Saturday night, it would take me maybe 2 hours one day to get through all of them.
Oh,
So,
really?
yeah, it doesn't take me a long time to do photos. I've done it for 10 plus years, so I have a pretty good system. And you just pick out the good ones. That's
Right.
really.
Well, and you know what you're looking for.
Right.
You know, and I would assume that after doing it for so long, you know what they need, whether it's brightness or this or that, where
Yeah,
I look at them and I'm out to lunch. I don't know what any of them, so.
majority of the time, you know, I have my stuff for Woodhull and I had my stuff for Outlaw, and it kind of translates to every photo that I take, right? So I just got halfway through Braylon Lawson's senior photos, and some of the presets that I have, I'm using on those, and they're working because that's my style, that's what I like, and it all comes down to creating your style and your brand when it comes to social media. And that's how people know you. That's how people hire you, because they like your style stuff. Majority of people that know the business aren't going out and hiring a photographer or videographer and saying, "Hey, I like this guy's stuff. Can you shoot it like him?" They're hiring that guy because they like his stuff, or woman, whatever.
Do you still shoot a lot?
Yeah, actually, this coming week I'm going to Dirt Week, and I'll shoot all week. I'll be there Sunday to Sunday and probably take 5,000 photos throughout the week and video and stuff like that. So, if anybody's going to Dirt Week, you get your taste of CWP back at, behind the lens.
What made you get started in that? And how
Well,
long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it since 20. Oh, 2014 probably. So
Right after high
ironic,
school.
yeah, pretty much during a little bit during, and then right after high school. So Dayton's mom, Jolynn, had always I'd always go to the races, and I wouldn't go in the pits. I'd go sit in the stands and go sit up in the booth with Jolynn, and all night. And she always had a camera there, and she'll appreciate this, and I think so will Bill, is I used to steal her camera and take pictures of people's butt cracks in the stands, and she'd always go through them, and that's what she got for the night. And at some point it transitioned from butt cracks, because I wasn't a kid anymore, to cars on the track. And I started with her camera, and then I got my own. I think I started with a T5 Rebel. It's like a $300 camera. It was used. I had a cheap lens. I shot from the stands. I mean, right outside, I stood right below where the booths are, and shot into turn one and two at Woodhall for probably 2 years. Bought my own pit passes, shot from the pits, and then Robert Simons and Bobby Chalmers had welcomed me into Race Pro Weekly, and that gave me credential access to Woodhall, where I could go into the infield. And then I started from there. I kind of taken a step back, went to school, went to Oswego. Bobby said, "Hey, why don't you come to Dirt Week since you're already here?" So that was my first taste at Dirt Week in 2019. Shot practice, the Salute to the Troops 150, and as crazy as it sounds with how much I'm involved in racing, is I skipped out on the 200 on Sunday that year, and it kills me that I did that. Like, I looking back at it now, I won't miss anything for Dirt Week. I've missed weddings and stuff, like family weddings. I'm like, "Oh, sorry, it's on Dirt Week, I can't go." So and kind of really the rest is history there. I never put the camera down ever since. So
Was there a big learning curve when you moved from shooting butt cracks to race cars?
yeah, probably. I mean, those butt cracks didn't really move. The race cars kept moving, so it was kind of harder to follow them, but
Man, I tried it. It's so hard. That's one thing in motorsports that I think is very, very overlooked.
yeah,
To
I
make
think.
a to have a good picture is really hard. And I tried, and they're blurry. It's really hard. And I think that's one thing where you're in the grandstands, you're like, well, I mean, I could do that. You're just taking a picture. Everybody's got a phone. They could all take a
Yeah.
picture. But I remember when I was working at Outlaw last year, I would pick your brain for about 30 to 40 minutes trying to
Yep.
figure out what the heck I can
That's
do better to. It's.
what it's all about. I mean, it's all learning. You never stop learning. I don't stop learning now. I mean, I will tell you, every year I go to Dirt Week, Brent Smith, he is an amazing photographer. He takes some of the coolest photos, and every year, that's about the only race I ever see him. And I will pick his brain about how he's shooting, what he's shooting, and where, because I don't get to interact with him every time I'm at the track. And that's a brain that I really like the images that come out of, and I want to implement his style and his flair, I guess, into my stuff. And the part that I didn't see from the racer's point of view is really what I gave them from being at the track so often with all the photos I took, is it kills me now to not have what they had when I was there. You know, not to toot my own horn, but like I take a lot of photos and I post a lot of photos. There's not many photographers out there that will do that. So when I go race Outlaw or Woodhull or, you know, you go to any track, they're all like this, is you might get a photo of your car. For some of these guys, they never do. You know, that's tough. You know, you're trying to push sponsorship and all these, and you don't have any photos of your cars. You're trying to do your social media, and you know, we're mid-season. I've recycled the same photo 7 times. Like, it's a struggle, you know, and some of these guys, they definitely expressed it after I left, you know. AJ being one of them, he's like, why don't you just race Woodhull and keep shooting Outlaw? Like, I'm like, I don't know what's gonna happen. I don't know if I'll have time, because that was the original plan, as I was gonna shoot Fridays at Outlaw and then race Saturdays at Woodhull. And you know, looking back at it now, yeah, it seems like a great plan, but those photos would have never gotten done. Never. And that's just not what I like to do. I don't like to let them sit. If I let them sit, they don't get touched. So, but
And so how do you, when you go to all these other tracks, what do you call ahead to shoot them a message on Facebook or do
yeah, it
how?
depends on the track. I mean, unfortunately, before Bobby passed, I would normally text Bobby, and say, hey, I want to go here this date. Can you reach out to the track and give me credentials? And he would. So like Weedsport, you had to do that through them. I was pretty tight with the guy that used to run the media for Short Track Super Series. So whenever there was a Short Track Super Series, I just shoot him a text, say, hey, throw me on the list. I'm coming to this race. There's all different channels. Dirt Week has to be put in weeks before. Normally, like, you know, it's like I think for Woodhull or Outlaw, it's normally like a 24-hour to 48-hour grace period to get it approved. But you know, it's definitely underappreciated, right? So there's always the threat where tracks don't want to sell. They don't want you to sell, and that's where it gets into a gray area, because you know, you have customers and they all buy from you at other tracks. So now you're at this track, why can't I? You know, it's a gray area, and it's hard to navigate. But the best thing a track can do is have more photographers at their track, more videographers, the more publicity that you can put out, you know.
Well, I could tell you it makes my job a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely. And if you can get 10, 5 to 10 photos from each of those photographers a night, you know, it's a different angle. It's a different thing to look at, you know. And you know, trying to make posters and everything like that, you know, you're reusing the same angle. Everything looks the same. So, and one of my pet peeves, and I've done it this year just out of pure, I had to, is like a race day post, right? Woodhull race day post, I'm using an Outlaw photo because that's what I got, or that's what I like. You know, I would love to use a Woodhull photo on every single Woodhull race day post that I make. Same with any other track. You know, if you're going to a brand new track, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. You don't have a picture from that track. But like, I've been racing at both tracks all year, and I do have photos from both, so you know, it works out, but not everybody does.
Navigating photographers is tricky business too.
Yeah.
And I always try. I know you'll vouch for. I've always tried to ask for permission before I use pictures, but sometimes I've used them without. But and that's only because I never heard back, or you know, for whatever reason. But I always try, and
Yeah.
it's hard because it's their work, so.
Right. I'm
But.
a firm believer in, you know, either pay or ask for permission. Like, if I see somebody, there's not much that I do about it. I used to kind of get throw a fit about it, but now I'm like, whatever, it is what it is. But if I see like a series or a track that I know never raced at that track, and then I see my photo on their poster, well, that's weird. They don't have access to that. That happened a couple years ago, and I was like, they tried to say, oh, we have rights to that. We that was our race, and it wasn't. They checked it. I checked the calendar, and they never raced there, so it was never a series race. I'm like, whatever. Happy New
Right.
Year's, because that was a New Year's Day argument. I'm like, that's not worth it. So, but
Right. Well,
it's a tricky world. I mean, people,
is.
those photographers don't do it for free. I
Right.
could tell you that everybody there's trying to make a dime because they have to. I mean, those cameras, my cameras are worth more than some of those race cars that go around that track. Like, they're
Right.
not cheap.
Yeah, absolutely not.
And you know, people will pay for photos if you put them, if they're good enough quality, or you know, even I bought photos this year that, you know, I probably, if I took them, they would have gone in the trash, but they're what I got, and that's what I'm going to buy. So,
Right. Well, and the other thing too is I've never been told no by a photographer.
yeah, most of the time.
You know, usually I can tell you exactly how it goes. 90. So if I go and I want to use just your picture or Joe Kaminsky or whoever, and I want to use their picture, 9 times out of 10, actually 10 times out of 10 in my experience, I sent him a message that said, "Hey, do you mind if I use your picture on the Woodhull Facebook?" And they say, "What picture?" And I'll
Yep.
send it to them. And they said, "No, absolutely not. Thanks for asking." At least that's my experience.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tricky. It all depends on the photographer, right? So it's to their discretion, I guess, unless it was taken at the track. Then the
Right.
track, it all depends on what the media agreement says, right? So if your media agreement says any photo that you take here, this is how Weed Sport is, right? Weed Sport is any photo that's taken at the track, they have the right to. They
Okay.
have the right to use it. Do they own the rights to the photo? No, but they own the rights to use it.
Right. So that would be if you put it up on Facebook, they could take that and do whatever they.
Yeah, pretty much. Don't quote me on that, but it's pretty close to that, right? So any photo, there's weird rules. Like
There is. And the.
theirs is very unique, you know, but it's Weed Sport. Weed Sport is
Right.
a top-notch facility,
Absolutely.
and they run things like it's NASCAR. So, and
Well,
that's in a good way. Like,
absolutely. Well, that's another thing that people don't see is, they don't, not a lot of people know the inner workings of that kind of stuff. And
right.
you try not to step on people's toes. I don't like doing it. I think I used one of Greg Messler's posts before. I reached
I
out
think
and I
with the
didn't.
Billy thing, right?
Yep, and I reached out and I didn't hear anything, so I just said, "Well, I'm just going to
We'll
use it
see.
and hope for the best." And he
Like,
never sent
yeah, I think
anything.
that was originally made for, you know, Billy or Woodhull. So
Well, right.
that's one thing or the other. And when it comes to, you know, where that, I'm pretty positive it's what I'm thinking of. That was made, you know, 5 years ago at this point. You know,
Yeah, right.
he's done and gone. Messler hasn't shot for 4 years. You know, good luck getting an answer from him, right?
Right.
So,
Well, we threw it up and hoped for the best, and he hasn't called and yelled at me yet. So
he's all
usually,
right to deal with, but
yeah,
I got to
usually,
know him pretty well from Outlaw.
yeah, usually I get away with stuff pretty well. Like you said, when you go to races all your life and you meet all these people beforehand, and then
Yep.
I don't know, sometimes it's a little easier to work with friends than it is with people that you don't know.
Right, absolutely. And that's a big thing is meeting all your media people, or and I don't know who runs the actual media approval anymore at this point at Woodhall, but you could probably tell me, but
I can't. I don't know.
yeah.
I can tell you who runs the Facebook and who puts
Yeah,
all the posts up on that and who does that stuff. I could tell you exactly who does that, but short of that, I don't. But I never really wanted to know too much.
the more you know, the more trouble you can get in, right?
Well, that and I don't know. I'm not always going to agree with everybody. And that's the
Absolutely.
same way with everybody. So I never really wanted to be in a position. I love my job, and I never really wanted to be in a position to have to pick sides with anybody.
Right.
I wanted to run the Facebook for the drivers, namely. I can tell you that since I've taken over, there's a lot more pictures of race cars on it. And I think that's good for everybody.
That's normally helpful. I mean, it pushes interest into your track. If you post a drone shot of the track 17 times all season, and I've never seen a car on the track, do they race there? I don't even know. It might be a cornfield with a dirt circle in the middle, but
I will tell you though, those drone shots are pretty sweet.
they are definitely
Did
cool. I
you
mean,
see the one that Robbie Simons took at Canandaigua last week? That was a
that's what I
very good
was
shot.
just going to talk about. That's the perfect setting. Sunset, lights are on, everything. That's dirt racing right there in the fall. You have these beautiful sunsets blinding your drivers going down the backstretch, but beautiful nonetheless. And to be able to capture a moment like that's more than taking a photo. That's telling a story. And I think going back to, everybody can take a picture, but nobody can tell a story. Not everybody can tell a story. And that's one of the biggest things that I keep in mind when I'm behind the camera is, okay, can I capture what's happening at this moment? There's nothing compared before I got in the car, I will say, to being as excited to getting the shot when, say, Alex Payne parks on Doherty's nose for the lead on the last lap. That shot was killer. I mean, there's nothing like getting that. It tells such a story. And if you get the lap counter in there too, where it says 29, you got one to go. And all these little things that you don't notice in the photo, but every photographer that can tell that story through one photo, exactly what's happening right there. So it's an art,
It
to
is,
say the least.
absolutely. And I give you guys all a bunch of credit. Do you ever get worried when you were down there about, because you guys got to get close.
Yeah, no, thankfully I wasn't down there for anything crazy. Like, I wasn't there the night Art passed and did donuts in the infield, thankfully. And but there's been close calls. I mean, Will Nelly, he's got a pretty famous video of him running out of the way of a car sliding through the infield. But I've never really had those close calls. I don't. I mean, you catch me at Dirt Week this week, I'll be standing on top of the Jersey barriers with my hand hanging out over top of the track. Like, I've leaned against the Jersey barriers with my face against the Jersey barriers, 3 feet from the left front tire at Weedsport. Like, none of that stuff really ever bothered me. You just need to know where to stand, really. I mean, you know where the cars are going to go for the most part. They do weird things sometimes, but
Well, especially when you're going up there, up there, they're the best of the best, they're not,
yeah, well, sometimes,
well,
but but
they're
yeah,
supposed
they
to be.
are. When you're going to those races, yeah, they're the best of the best at Dirt Week, in the big blocks, in the small blocks, and even the crate guys. I mean, they're all good drivers. Like, they all have talent. They all are there for a reason. And it's not just money. Part of it's money, but they're all there for a reason in the end of the day.
Right.
But go ahead.
What are your plans for next year? Kind of do the same thing, or?
I'm gonna build a Bicknell for next year. Not a brand new car. I'm actually gonna get a Kyle Leach's old 15 that he ran, not this year but last year. We're gonna switch over to Bicknell from the TO, just easier to get bumpers and stuff, because I've been a bunch of those and now I don't have any. So I think that'll be a step in the right direction. Be a little easier to set up and all that. But I think as of right now, probably end up doing the same thing. Saturday nights at Woodhull. Maybe I'll run points. We'll see what happens, I guess. I know there's a wedding in there sometime that I probably should go to. So I don't know if I'll make every night at Woodhull. But we'll start our season at Outlaw next year again, for practice, and then probably the season opener for, I don't even know what that's called, Lucas Oil Nationals, and then work our way back to Woodhull. It's 15 minutes down the road. It's hard not to go to.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not everybody does it though, you
Right.
know. Do you I don't know. Do you I had something and I completely just completely forgot. What do you do in your day-to-day life?
My day-to-day life, I like job and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I live in Addison. I work for Spectrum as a it's my technical job title is field technician. So when your internet stops working and stuff like that, your TV stopped working, or you like a few weeks ago when I had to go to your mom's house and fix your internet, that's what I do.
I will tell you, I have never had I they have the worst. I don't know what it is about place, but the internet is just absolutely terrible.
Well, it might be the wiring, I'm not sure, but
Well, I've yelled at your poor employees more times than I care to admit because I don't. Well, because so the way it was, and you've been there, so the way is that it runs across the porch and across, because that's where the
Oh, yeah.
computer was back when you had to have it in the computer. Well, what I
Gotcha.
wanted to do was run it straight from the pole right through and put a little shelf in the corner there. So it's just straight through there and it doesn't go down and around all that stuff that it does. Well, they, you know.
There might be a reason for that. I can't remember your house exactly, or that house exactly. It does have to be bonded to your electric at some point, so it might have had to go into the basement to hit the electrical. So I'm not sure on that, but
No,
or
it hits it in the corner. But
oh,
yeah.
then they were
Well,
lazy.
no,
I don't
because
know.
the way it was is back when they put it in originally, that's before you had Wi-Fi. So
Oh, okay.
you would run it to a home computer, and that's where they had the home computer set up when I was a kid. And
Gotcha.
that was back, you know, back way before anybody had Wi-Fi. So you would just run it right to there, and that's where it went. Well, that's not really the most efficient way to do it anymore.
Right. Yeah, it definitely wouldn't take much to change it.
Yeah,
So
you know, it is what it is. Since I guess since you've been there, it's been working pretty good. So,
that's good. That's what I
well,
like to hear.
I guess you could take all the credit for that one.
Yeah, it wasn't just me there, but yeah, I'll take the credit.
Yeah. I remember what I was going to tell you. I have to miss a week of wood. I don't know if I told. I haven't told Nikki or Terry this yet, so I hope it doesn't get me in too much trouble. But I have to miss 1 week next year too. So don't feel too bad.
Not allowed.
Well, I hope it is. One of my good friends is getting
Yeah.
married, and I've skipped a lot of weddings and a lot of other stuff to do it. And
Yep.
I haven't the only time I've taken a week off in 3 years is the birth of my daughter. And I'm
Wow,
telling you
that's
right now, if she
seems
wasn't
like a
born on
valid
a
reason.
Saturday, if she wasn't born on a Saturday, I would have
You
been
would have been
there.
at the track. Yep. Well,
So
should have been right at the track having the birth. That's what you should have been doing. That's,
yeah, we could yeah, we could
they
take we could open
got
up one of the
EMTs there. It's fine.
Well, somebody did say that we could take one of those booths that we got up there and have it be a birthing suite.
Oh boy.
You imagine that?
You'd have a line out the door for
Yeah, I don't know about that,
that.
but
Hey, people have gotten married, engaged, all of the above, just not birthed there. So you never know. Might be untapped market.
well, I don't know. I think maybe if you count the parking lot, I bet somebody's been birthed there before.
That's probably true.
If you really want to get into it, I bet you there have. Probably nobody will admit to it, but you know.
No. I don't. That'd be quite the wild story. Where were you born? Oh, Woodhull Raceway in the parking lot.
In the parking
Yeah,
lot. Well, I'm sure there's crazier.
I can imagine.
And
There's.
at least at Woodhull, you know, if you're leaving there and the baby's coming now, you might actually be better off doing it because you're probably just gonna have it in the car somewhere. Because it's
That's possible. I mean, you got 35 minutes to the Hornell.
Yep.
And probably about the same to the Corning. So,
Right.
yeah, just call the ambulance. There's one on site.
Well, yeah, it just can't take anywhere.
That's
Well, no,
okay.
actually now the one from Woodhull can. I always forget that they have that now.
The ambulance that's on site can take you somewhere.
No, but they have so the what is
The Woodhull
Steuben
ambulance.
County Transport, like the MTS.
Gotcha.
They've got one of them at Woodhull now that Terry Pierce's daughter, I think, runs, and
Okay.
they're available till like 11 o'clock at night on Saturday specifically for the racetrack.
Nice.
And as you know, living in the area, there's not really too many times
Yeah.
that they get called out.
No.
So you know,
Well, that's good.
that's a safety bonus, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely, you never really want to have to use them, but it's always great that it's there. Safety goes, I think, under it's overlooked,
Absolutely.
it, for as much damage as our cars can do to our own bodies and all the things that happen in the fan in the stands and in the pits, having EMTs and a transporter on call like that is so important, but it also often never gets thought about because you never want to use it.
Right. Well, that's what I said when I watched that Stuart Friesen wreck. You know, I go, what would we do? You know, and that's not a Woodhull thing. I think that's 95% of racetracks. You
Yeah.
know, something like that happens, you're like, what would we do? You know, like
Yeah,
how do we?
I think they ended up calling the fire department.
Well, that would probably be what I would think most people would do, because I.
Yeah, because they ended up cutting them out with jaws of life. So, you're either cutting them out with jaws of life or you're getting somebody's Sawzall out of the pits and cutting the car apart in that situation. How they got them out, I have no idea, but it wasn't fun. I can
No,
tell
I
you that. I've seen, AJ Petrobrowski Sr. destroyed a car at Outlaw, and they cut the roof out of that, and that car was destroyed, and it was nothing. I mean, nothing compared to what Friesen's wreck was.
well, that was a
If
couple
you,
of them, you know. He
yeah,
cuz he came down on the guardrail. That was a good
yeah,
shot, and then he got hit a couple of times, you know. That was just,
yeah,
you know.
and it didn't take long for Bicknell and then the other manufacturer, other car makers, let's go with that word, to make changes to the chassis to make them safer. You're reinforcing these parts, and I've heard rumors of guys switching to, Bicknell offers a soft tail and a hard tail, switching back over to the hard tail and back from a version 2 floor to a solid floor to, build up their safety. They can give up the little performance that those things gave them to be safer. I mean, all of these guys that I've heard switching back to that are new dads. So, they take a look at what happened to Friesen and, probably the effects it'll have on his career the rest of his life. And those guys all don't want that to happen. So we're doing fine with what we got, and, safety's first, right?
Right, and I'll even say the safety, just the fact that I mean, I know, I guess he couldn't walk away because he had a broken hip or leg, but the fact that, you know, in the grand scheme of things,
Walked away from that. Yeah.
he could, you know, he was still coherent, you know, he.
Yeah. I mean, if you had done that 10 years ago, I wouldn't say we'd be having this conversation today. We'd be talking about something way worse. But,
Right.
with
Well,
the way,
then it
go
would
ahead.
be a bad note, so we probably wouldn't talk
Yeah, right.
about
Yeah. I mean, with the way that safety's come with your Haas devices and your Simpson hybrids and everything like that, to the strength of the cages, and all these chassis builders make great cars no matter what it is. TO, DKM, Higfab, Troyer, Bicknell, they're all safe cars. And that's really what's important at the end of the day, is if I wreck this thing into the wall, am I gonna be able to walk away from it?
Right.
And 90% of the time these guys do,
Yeah,
which is really
I mean,
impressive.
really, he's what, one of the only ones that I even remember that's been, you know,
Yeah, I
had
mean,
to take time out of the car. I know it happens in spring cars a lot, but just strictly speaking of modifieds, I don't remember much where somebody's had to take a lot of time off.
no, I mean, the only massive wreck that I can think of in the past couple years was Maresca at Ponda. I mean, he, I don't think ever turned for turn three and just went straight into the wall, probably at 130 or whatever, however fast they go there. I mean, that's a big track. That's a fast track. He was flying. And that junked that car. It was a huge wreck. And I think he raced the feature that night in a different car. So, I mean,
Was
that
that for the
tells you.
200?
I want to say yes, but
I
don't quote
think
me
I
on
might
that.
have been there. And he drove right through the Right through that guardrail. Is there a guardrail right there?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I think I
Yeah.
was there that weekend.
That was a bad wreck, and
Yes.
he definitely kept racing at least the rest of the season the next week. So, I mean, there's been plenty of bad wrecks where guys just they just walk away. I mean, look at that one in Bridgeport. I don't know, somewhere in PA. With all the modifieds, all those guys with the Ringo's Rocket and Shepherd and Williamson Mahaney. I mean, those cars were all destroyed, and every single one of those drivers walked away from that.
Right. Do you ever think about getting anything other than a modified?
No.
No.
That's about my simplest answer is no. And what I told everybody is I don't know anything about anything else. Because Austin will tell you, he's told me all the whole time I've been doing this is, get a late model, get a late model, get a
I'm
late
sure he
model. Like,
has.
I don't know a thing about them. I know they got five shocks and that's weird, and that's all I know. So, no, I knew the most about modifieds. I'd been around modifieds the most. Did I know everything? No. Does anybody know everything? No. But I knew the most, and that was what was important. And that's what I wanted to race. It's what I've wanted to race since I think Dayton raced in 06 Bicknell in the crate class 10 years ago. And I'm like, I want to do that. You're doing it. So, yeah, I've always wanted to race modifieds. That's what all my majority of my friends race. So,
Right. And is that what you guys do on iRacing? For the
yeah,
most
we,
part, modifieds?
yeah. Back when COVID hit, there weren't modifieds on. We started in late models doing the Woodhull limited late model. Well, started in street stocks actually. When Woodhull had their street stock races, and then we switched to late models, and we raced late models for a long time. And then they released modifieds, and we've never turned back since. It's been modifieds every night, 358s at any track and every track other than Port Royal.
Why
Not
is
good
that?
there, so we don't go there.
Why is that?
I just can't run there. I don't know. It's top dominant, and I bang it off the wall and roll the car. So,
It's hard. That's another thing, and I don't know. I it's different, but I would say it's almost it's hard to iRacing's hard. Before I drove Kyle's Sportsman,
yep.
the night before I went to his house and I was in his sim. And I didn't roll it, I didn't flip it, but boy, did we have to reset a lot because my what's it say there, damage to the rear end or
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the damage on it should turn that off for you. Then you would
no,
never have
that
to
I think that would
reset
defeat the purpose of learning.
it. Yeah, we do a lot of no damage races because, we junk a lot of stuff, but yeah, it's taken a long time to get to where we are. We have super competitive races. I mean, it's great. You get to race with people who you race with or don't race with in real life. Like, the past couple of weeks, Chris Darling, Colton Coutts, Blake Parsons, we've all been racing. Just the other night, me and Colton had a 30-lap slider battle. I mean, that's experience in my eyes that you don't get in the real car. That sorta, I will put a big sorta, can translate back to real life. I
Do you
think the biggest thing is, go ahead.
think that helps like the younger guys? Because I know Russell Morseman, he does it a lot. AJ, he does it a lot. Like you say, Chris Darling, he just won a big race at Outlaw. And how old's he? I mean, he didn't
Yeah,
look much older than 12 in Victory Lane, but.
Darling's definitely young, but if you look at his resume, I mean, he's been racing since he was like five. So, in real life, and my biggest thing for my racing is it gives you experiences that you would experience on the track, but you can do them over and over again. So, like knowing how close you need to be to slide or how close you can get to the car. Some of those things do translate, but other things don't. Like the cars don't handle exactly the same, and you probably found that out.
Yeah.
You can't drive the cars like you can in iRacing. They're totally different in that aspect, but side by side battles and stuff like that, where you can kind of get used to somebody being next to you and knowing what to do when that happens. That was always my, this is what you can take from iRacing, is the situational, this is what I should do in this situation, rather than learn it the hard way and wreck your car in real life.
Right. Well, I boy, an hour kind of flew by here,
Yeah, it
Kyle.
did, didn't it?
I'm gonna ask you one more question before I let you get out of here. How'd you get your number? Maybe two off
23,
of that.
23 has been my number since I was probably five. It's LeBron James, as cliche as it sounds, not Jordan. Everybody says Jordan. I'm too young, ironically, for Jordan. It was always LeBron, and that was my number all through high school. Every sport I played was 23. I've just stuck with it for the rest of my life.
And how'd you come up with the idea for the wrap, the purple wrap? Because it is a very sharp looking race car.
Well, I designed it myself, but I think Chili Bowl time, I'm pretty positive it was Logan Seavey. He had his midget was purple. It was Victory Fuel, if I'm not mistaken. But either way, the sponsor was like a grape flavor, so the whole car was purple. I designed it all. And then took it to Wicked Tees and they put their finishing touches on it. I told Greg Molt, who does most of their design work, I said, this is the color I want. Can you finish what I started and put it on the car? And he did an awesome job with what I gave him. And everybody over there at Wicked Tees is just killer. I mean, I couldn't ask for better friends and better people to work with over there.
Absolutely. Sponsor at the Woodhull Raceway too.
Yeah, big time.
Do you are you gonna stick with that color? Because I'm guessing you gotta get a new wrap. If you're getting a
Yeah,
new car, you
I'm gonna have to get a new body and a new wrap. Yeah, I think I've worked out some I've already been working on a new wrap for next year. It's a little early, things can change, but I think we're gonna splash in some, gold or something in there to liven it up a little bit. It's kinda, I wouldn't say bland, but I think it could have more pizzazz to it. So
Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing. That's not a bad way to buy merchandise because I can tell you a little story here. So I've got race shirts for everybody in my closet, and I grew up, as I'm sure you know, with Austin Allen. Me and Austin been good friends for a long time. Well, that guy, he changes his car color every year. So I've got a pink shirt, a purple shirt, a blue and red shirt. So that might be a good way to get merchandise sold too.
It would be a good idea. I think we'll probably be push some merchandise next year. I didn't want to do it this year. We got super busy with trying to figure out the overheating issue in the middle of the season that I kind of got behind on it. And one of my sponsors and my stepmom was like, are you gonna do shirts? You're gonna do shirts? My sisters and all my family was like, are you gonna do shirts? I'm like, you guys pay for them, I'll do them. But I just didn't have the time and really the desire to do it for my first year. I think it's a little cliche to do merchandise your first year. I don't, but could I move product? Probably, not to be cocky, but I know a lot of people, and a lot of people probably would have bought them, so maybe
Well,
I should have done
I'm sure you're in the same boat I have, is that we bought a million shirts off everybody else, so
Yeah.
now it's time for them to buy a Colin Wyatt shirt.
Yeah, I did my push a couple years ago with the CWP shirts, and I made pretty good off of that, and there's quite a bit of them out there. I see them every once in a while, just randomly walking around. It's kind of cool because there weren't that many. There were probably 100 that sold, and I have one of them, and everybody, all the other 100 are out there somewhere. But
I'll tell you one thing. I love when the smaller budget teams get race shirts because I love going places and seeing them. I went to Weedsport and I saw a Brian Doolittle t-shirt, and
yeah, you don't see those often.
I said, "Yep, that's a guy that goes to Woodhull right there." And they, but.
That's neat. That's the cool part about shirts and apparel and everything like that is like you can tell, where these people are from, not in a creepy way, but like you can say, hey, that's probably a local at my track that I announce at or that I race at. Like they have some point went to that track. which is great because, these people, everybody needs to get to new tracks. I think track owners need to get to new tracks and, not just watch the races, but watch what they do with the track. Watch what happens during the track prep when they do all their stuff. Everybody has what works for them, but no track's perfect. I mean,
Well, it,
you're not gonna find a track that's perfect.
right. And I always thought that if you went to, if you went over to Outlaw and they did something just a little bit that you think, hey, we could do that and we could make that better, that, there's just different things that you could pick up from everywhere and, just little things. I mean, you're probably not going to go there and learn something brand new, but just little ideas.
Just something that they're doing that works, that you think works, like to get either fans engaged or it's working with track prep or it's working with lineup, stuff like that. I mean, bringing lineup to my race pass is huge. I mean, not every track does that. And, I'd like to get on my race pass, see where Land of Legends is in the show, where Fonda is in the show, where Accord is in the show. Accord doesn't use race pass, so I got to go to a different app. But that's a different story. But using all those apps is great. And I take it from my media side of the view, from the track side of the view. I can look and see, hey, they started their show at 6 o'clock and they're on their third heat, or their third heat, and we're on our first feature. We're doing pretty good tonight. Or like, that's how I gauge it. And I think there's tools that people don't realize they can use them as those tools to make the track better.
Well, and it make it th those apps make my job a lot easier. And whoever was the poor soul that had to go run lineups, before, I don't know who that was, but whoever had to go from the pit
Back in the
stack
day, it
over,
used to be Kim Simons, is what I remember, is going back and forth. You'd always see her when we were younger. She'd run from the pit booth to the grandstand side and, all up and down that hill. You would think somebody said, grade this stinking hill, but I'm sick of walking it. But that never happened.
Yeah, that would have been Bob. That would have been in my days sitting in front of Brandon Brewer with my dad.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. I mean, I think everybody that used to be there did it at some point, but it was a lot easier. It's definitely a lot easier. And not being at a track, knowing what's going on through an app like that is huge. I mean, you can look at pretty much any track in America and say, oh, Colin Wines went in this race, or Joe Cook's winning that race. Joe Cook's
I
in
wouldn't.
third.
You wouldn't see
Joe
that.
Cook just got lapped. Colin
Yeah,
did too. Like,
that might be more the right speed there. Well, Colin, I've kept you long enough. I think we went over an hour. This might be the longest, one of the longest ones I've done. But,
oh,
just
probably.
why don't you just tell us about some people that help you out? Give them a shout out before I let you out of here.
I gotta put a huge shout out to Brennan Thurber, at Hunt Real Estate. I mean, he came right on board the second I asked him. He didn't even bat an eye. I mean, that's all I could ask from any sponsors, undying support. Johnny and June's and Garcia's Barbershop, out in Hornell, and then CWP for footing the bill every week, and I got and Big K Seal Coating. Those guys had helped me. I'd had my car down at their shop for a couple weeks, trying to figure out a brake issue early in the year, and just like it back to helping everybody. It's great. Lawson's Racing for everything they did over the off season during the season. JDR Performance for my shocks, and Wicked Tees for helping me out with the wrap. And Bill Brewer, my dad, and Dayton, anybody that helps me at the track every week. So I gotta really appreciate just everybody that helps,
I do. It takes a village, right?
Yeah,
All
definitely does.
right. Well, we're gonna have to do this again because like I said, we kind of flew through this hour and it went by fast. So,
Yeah, it definitely did.
and I have to thank you, Colin. So, for those of you that don't know, I am pretty much new to this whole making flyers and posters and all this stuff. So, every time I make one, and I always send it to Colin to get a little bit of criticism and just see what I could do better. So, I thank you for that and always being available for me too.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't mind doing it at all. I mean, all it tells me is you want to get better, and that's all I want to see. And you know, I want every track to succeed and be successful. And I think it starts with the media. That's huge. If people don't know about your track, they're not going to come to it. So that's where it starts.
Absolutely. And I think we're on the right track. We're just slow build, you
Yeah,
know?
absolutely. Rome wasn't built in a day.
Right. All right, Colin. Well, hey, thank you. I appreciate you making time for me here tonight. I'm glad your work schedule worked out so well. We could get
Yeah,
this
I
thing
know we got
done.
lucky.
All right. Hey, you have a good rest of your night.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you. So once again, I do want to thank DNL Disposal, the sponsor for the interviews on Bullring Breakdown. They should be your first call for your waste management needs. They offer a regular residential garbage route in Jasper, Troopsburg, Woodhall, Addison, and the surrounding areas. Aside from that, they also offer dump trailer service rentals for your bigger needs. They'll drop it off at your location. All you have to do is load it up and they will come and take it away. Give them a call today at 607-382-7609 to get started with DNL Disposal, the premier residential waste management service in the Woodhall area. I do want to thank everybody for listening this week. Great conversation with Colin. I can't thank him enough for joining me. I want to remind everybody, please like and subscribe on the YouTube page, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Follow us on Woodhall Raceway on Facebook and Woodhall Raceway 64 on TikTok. Follow along on the Facebook page for upcoming information on the banquet that should be coming out very soon. So stay tuned for that. And until next week, I hope you all have a great week.